Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation. I'm Sarah, and you're listening to Cradio. Today, I'm joined by Adrienne Price. Adrienne is a soloist and recording artist trained in classical and sacred music. She has two solo albums and has appeared frequently on EWTN. And today, she joins us from Birmingham, Alabama. Adrienne, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. There's a 16-hour difference between us, You've been awesome to work with. I appreciate you taking this time to interview.
First of all, could you just tell us a bit about yourself, about your background and where you're from?
Okay. I grew up in Ohio, the upper Midwest part of the United States. My father was from Kentucky, and my mother, believe it or not, was from Adelaide, South Australia. She was born in Molfetta, Italy, and her family immigrated to Port Pirie, and then they went to Adelaide. And they met during World War II, and a couple of years after the war, they had still corresponded, and she came here to marry my father. So I grew up in Ohio with a wonderful, you know, my mother is very European in her speech and her mannerisms and polite, you know, table manners and everything. And my father liked to listen to bluegrass, and he was a good old boy. It was an odd upbringing, that's for sure. I grew up always loving music and a variety of music, and I think a lot of it comes from my mother would sing, like Libiamo from La Traviata, and my father would play on the radio bluegrass and country, and I was exposed to a great variety of music as a child.
And so I think I read you've been singing since you were 12 years old.
Well, yes. Yes, I started piano when I was 5, and at 12, I continued my piano, but I went to my first opera when I was 12 years old. I went to see The Magic Flute, Mozart's Magic Flute. And I just said, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to be an opera singer at 12. And a lot of 12-year-olds aren't really interested in that. So my mother thought, oh, finally we get an opera singer in the family. And so I started taking voice lessons as well and started singing with local orchestras. At about age 14 and 15. So I had such a zeal, and I worked so hard, and I really had a fire in my belly, you know, to sing. And I sang a lot, and I did some music theater and just a lot of oratorio, sacred text set to music, that's oratorio. And by the time I was 18, though, I had sung so much, I started getting hoarse, you know, like if you've been to a football game and the next day or two you still are kind of raspy and you don't feel vocally all that healthy, you know. I started getting that sensation at 18, and I went to an ENT doctor in my hometown of Middletown, Ohio. I went to him, and he looked at my vocal cords, and he said, you have nodules. I said, what is that? What is that? What are those? And he said, those are calluses on your vocal folds. So the more technical term for your vocal cords are your vocal folds. And he said, you need to take time off from singing. And I said, I can't. I'm putting on a recital. I've got a recital. I'm going off to college. Or appearance college, for you it would be uni, I stay in touch with all of my family in Australia, so we have to. I have to translate in my brain sometimes. We all speak English, but we have a little different sometimes. So I was about to go off to uni, and I gave my recital. It was quite a struggle, but I gave it, and it went off fine. But I really struggled in the first semester of school trying to sing and do the classes and. You know, people that are 18 and going off, I wasn't exactly eating well or sleeping like I should and not taking care of myself. And my nodules just kept getting worse and worse. I went on voice rest. I did speech therapy after a while. I had to take a year off from school. It got so bad. And I went, I did push it a little bit, and I went into an opera chorus with the Dayton Opera, and I could only sing softly a little bit, and they seemed to subside, the nodules seemed to subside a little bit, and then I went on to a major conservatory music, just because I was, you know, when you're young, Sarah, I don't know you personally, but maybe some of your listeners can relate to this. We think more of boys, but girls too can think of themselves as being bulletproof. You know, no matter what we do with our lives, it's not going to affect us. It's not going to affect us in the long run. So I went to the Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati, and it took me 6 years to get my bachelor's degree because I would still have to take time off, go on voice rest. I was just determined I was going to be an opera singer, and I really wanted to go to the conservatory in Sydney. I wanted to be close to my family and study there, and then my ultimate goal was to start up an opera troupe that would go in the outback of Australia. And it became very clear to me that those goals were not going to be achieved. And as soon as I did graduate, I was told you are not going to go on for your master's in Sydney. My voice teacher, my vocal coach, he was a baritone and had sung with the New York City Opera and such. And he was very credible. He said, you will not be a soloist. You will only be, if you're lucky, to sing in ensembles or choruses, but you're going to really need to pursue something else. And that I went into a Catholic church. I had been raised Catholic, but only nominally. We just went to Mass. No holy days of obligation, no rosaries. My dad was a convert, but he just converted only so that we would have a church to go to as a family and call ourselves one. You know, we were Catholics. But I went into a Catholic church the day that that professor told me, you will never be a soloist. You need to come up with a new career. And I'm 23 years of age, and I've put in all this time and study. And I went into a Catholic church, and I sat in the back pew, and I looked at the tabernacle, and I looked and I said, people have told me all my life that I have a gift from you. Well, you've taken it away from me. I don't need you. And I walked out of the Catholic church thinking, I'm free. I am no longer Catholic. I'm going to go into whatever I want to go, do whatever I want. God has turned his back against me. He's taken that gift away from me. I went into voiceover work doing radio and television commercials, doing character voices, and I got into television on-camera commercials as well. And I did sing a little bit in choruses and such. And that's where I also met my husband in Cincinnati at a recording studio. I was doing voiceovers for radio and television, and he was the engineer. And we started going out after a couple of years of working together, and he asked me out, and we got married 9 months later. And he was not Catholic. And he started coming to hear me sing in different churches. And one of the places I was singing was the cathedral in Cincinnati. And again, I didn't believe in what was going on. It was just music was my God, or voiceover, just working was my God. And my husband would go and take a magazine, a trade magazine in audio production, and he would read in the back of the church. And then when we'd start to sing, he would put the magazine down and listen. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, that's beautiful. Yes, yes, that's really nice. And then as soon as we were done, he went back to his magazine. And actually, I have to share this with you. It was on a Christmas Eve Mass, and we had been married for several years, about 3 or 4 years at that point. And I actually listened to the priest talking on Christmas Eve and saying, all of you probably have gifts at your house that you're wanting to give to your loved ones. And you just can't wait for their faces. And you see some of those gifts under the tree are for you, too. And you're all excited. You've spent tons of money on everybody. And you've decorated and you've made all these plans. But what are you giving to Jesus for his birthday? I actually listened that night because I normally didn't listen to what was being said during the homilies or if I was singing anywhere. I mean, I even sang in the Unitarian Church for about 4 years. I sang High Holy Days for the Reformed Jewish Temple in Cincinnati. And, oh, everywhere. I sang every Episcopalian and Lutheran and everywhere. But this night, I was paid to sing in the Catholic Church, and I listened. And I thought, huh, Jesus, that's true. It's Christmas. We are supposed to celebrate his birthday. How do you give Jesus a birthday gift? I mean, how do you do that? I had no idea. So the priest went on and said, he gave you all of your gifts and your talents. He gave you your life. He sacrificed his for you. Why don't you give your life to him for Christmas and tell him, I give you back the gifts and the talents and my very life, and you use it the way you want it? And I thought, huh, I wonder if my husband would be open to that. So the next morning, on Christmas morning, sitting under the Christmas tree before we opened up gifts, I asked him, would you mind if we kind of prayed? And he said, prayed? No, I don't mind. He was very open. And I made the sign of the cross, which I hadn't done in years. And he didn't make the sign of the cross, but I just said, Jesus, for your birthday, we give you our gifts and our talents and our lives back. And thank you. If you really can hear me, thank you. And you can use us as you want. Within a month, my husband received a phone call from a friend of his who was out in Los Angeles at Westwood One, a big radio network. And he said, you know, there's a big studio here, recording studio, and I've recommended you as their chief engineer, Tom. And if you're looking for work, I think they'd like to hire you. They'd like to meet you. And this was in the late 80s, early 90s, and the economy was going downhill. And my husband and I were freelance, voiceover and engineering at that point. We were doing all freelance, and it was started drying up. The Lord answered that prayer, and we went out there for an interview, and within less than a month after that, we were living in Los Angeles. So, you know, I can't even remember your original question, Sarah, but it's like, I guess it's just pouring out of me the story, how God has worked.
I mean, you had that experience at Christmas. So how did that continue to develop when you were in LA? Like LA, we hear a lot about it in Australia from American television.
No, you don't go out to Los Angeles to come closer to Jesus and Mary and the saints. It is called Los Angeles after the angels, but it is not, I'm afraid it may be more the fallen angels, but there are good and holy angels in Los Angeles. But at the time we went out there, we were very young and stupid. Although we did have a job waiting for us, and so many people will go to, whether it's Los Angeles or New York City or any major, you know, people come into Sydney, I'm sure, wanting to make it big without really having something to land on, like a nest, you know, a bird lands on its nest and such. So we were fortunate there was a job waiting for my husband, and it was Dick Orkin's Radio Ranch. And they did all comedy radio spots using only really the best, the top comedians of television and film, and just the stars. And they would come in doing character voices and everything. My husband loved to go to work. He'd come back with all kinds of jokes, and he worked with so many wonderful people, and he loved his work. Meanwhile, I got a job in Hollywood. Also, my husband was working in Hollywood. I was working at a small film company that was making movies. Gosh, it just slipped my mind. I don't think it's on anymore, but it was a cable network that had Showtime Network Television, and we made short films, half-hour films as fillers for Showtime. And I worked with the producers and the directors, and I was a first assistant director and was doing all that, had worked my way up in the film industry. Plus, I had an agent. I was doing on-camera commercials in Los Angeles and training videos out there. And then I got pregnant. And we had been married almost 5 years and no pregnancy, and we were fine with that. We were just, okay, well, no children, that's fine. We've got our careers. We've got one another. We weren't really wanting to even try to have children. And we got pregnant. I got pregnant. And when I told the film company, I said, well, I'm going to be out for a few months, and then I'm going to come back. I'm going to try this mommy thing, but if you still need me, I'll come back. Well, when our son was born, I was in my 30s, early 30s, something inside just sort of snapped. And I had always told my mother I was not the best of daughters. I was a rebel. And I said, you know, I told my mother, unfortunately, I said, I will never be a stay-at-home mom. I'm going to have a career. I'm going to make something of myself. Oh, what a cruel thing to say to your mother. What a cruel thing. But when I had my son, something inside of me snapped and said, I don't want to go back out. I want to be at home. So my mother came out to Los Angeles for the birth of our son. And I remember hearing that beautiful Australian accent as I was coming out of the anesthesia. And she said, oh, he's beautiful. He's got red hair. He's almost 11 pounds. He was the cutest thing on earth. And something interiorly woke me up. I was slowly waking up. If you saw pictures of me back then, you would say, no, she's not waking up yet. She was still L.A., you know. I was still trying to be fashion puss and try to be like everybody else. But I did start thinking, well, I've got auditions. I didn't go back to the film company, but I still had my agent. I was still going out for auditions. And I really didn't want to take my son around with me as a baby, you know, that needed, if he was to cry, you know, what am I going to do? So I started looking around for a sitter, and not finding anybody. I was being very protective, which surprised me, and surprised my husband too. But we were at a park one day in Los Angeles, and my husband noticed a man in the sandbox with his two little kids, and my husband's on the other end of the sandbox with our son, and the two fathers started talking, and it turns out that, well, I have to say, I wanted my son to be baptized Catholic, and just because that's what you were supposed to do. And my husband was there, and he said, well, you know, our son is Catholic, you're Catholic, I guess I'll become Catholic. So he did become a Catholic that first year of our son's life, and there they are in the sandbox, and my husband's in RCIA, he's preparing. And he says to this guy, he says, boy, my wife is becoming very picky, and we haven't been on a date in almost a year, you know. And he says, well, we've got a great sitter in the Hollywood Hills, and she's Catholic. But, I mean, she's really Catholic. And my husband says, well, I'm becoming a Catholic, too. So this might be good. My wife might like this. So we get her name and her phone number, and we go into the Hollywood Hills, and there's this older woman and her older husband. They're retired, and you walk in their house, and there's statues. They're Italian, okay? They're from Pennsylvania originally, but they are both 100% Italian. And the house looks like it's from Italy, and there's statues and pictures of saints and priests and rosaries and everything in the house. And I'm saying, she seems nice enough, but boy, is she taking this Catholic business way too far. But she started watching our son, and it became very clear that God sent us to meet Tilly Audia and her husband Butch. Tilly and Butch Audia, we were sent there to meet them because my husband and I were like dried up sponges. She would quote St. Teresa of Avila. She would quote John Paul II. She would quote the Catechism. And it didn't matter with us. It could have been anybody. Her husband was bringing home women that he had been praying in front of abortion clinics and twice brought home women that were pregnant who changed their minds about having an abortion. And they were so open, and they had adopted all four of their children, and they were true witnesses of the Catholic faith. And they would watch actors and actresses' children, screenplay writers, photographers, their children would come, and they felt like they were going to grandma's house. But what they were also getting was a healthy dose of scripture and catechesis. And it began to change our lives. We really started to go to Mass and confession. And when our son was about to go off to school, he was about 4 years of age, I said, no, we can't raise our son in this environment of Los Angeles. And it became very clear that we needed to get out of there. But we didn't want to leave Tilly and Butch. But we were praying. We were starting to go to Mass. And we were so on fire for our Catholic faith, thanks to that couple. But my husband sent out his resume to a variety of recording studios that he had ties with all over the country, all over the United States. And there was only one place that responded, and that was in Minnesota. And we had never been to Minnesota, but we went there, we interviewed, he took the job. We sold our house in Los Angeles in 3 days, which was unheard of. And we found a parish, and the priest, young. Oh, I don't think he'd been ordained more than, it was less than 10 years. And he was preaching. He had the Bible in one hand and a catechism in the other, and he was preaching. And it was the truths of the church, truths of the scripture. And the priest got to know us, we got to know him, and we started going to Eucharistic adoration and weekly, you know, during the week, going to Mass. And he told me, that priest, Father Tom Duffner, said, your husband's going to work for EWTN one day. And I said, what's that? I had no idea what it was. And in less than a year, my husband was working for EWTN. It was just an amazing thing. Just amazing. And I was singing in that church now and then, but if I tried to canter, I could canter for one Mass, but if I was asked to canter for two, Sarah, I could not even talk for 3 weeks. My vocal cords would swell up, the folds would swell, and I couldn't even talk. It was a most difficult time. But when we came down here, I went on the Feast of St. Blaise, and I knelt down before I was blessed. And this is in 1998, mind you. This has been a while. But I knelt down and I said, Lord, if the healing of my vocal cords aids in the salvation of my soul or anybody else who hears me sing through the intercession of St. Blaise, please heal me. Now, I was at the cathedral in Birmingham here. I cantered now just once in a while, and it happened that someone heard me canter. That person went back to their parish here in Birmingham, told the music director they'd heard someone singing that they wanted to hear me because they were looking for a new cantor. And they got in touch with me, and I started singing at that parish. And I was asked to sing for a wedding, and I hadn't sung for a wedding in a long time. And I was being asked to canter more and sing more and do more and more and more voiceover work, more and more, tons of it. And I was no longer hoarse. This was within a month of that prayer to St. Blaise, to Jesus through St. Blaise. And I went to my ENT doctor here in Birmingham, and I said, would you please scope my vocal cords. Look at them, please. And he looked and he said, your nodules are gone. There are no scars. There's no edema. There is nothing. You are perfectly healthy. So even though I had, none of that heat you hear about or that instant knowledge that I was healed, it became very clear just by the phone calls, the people asking me, come, do this, do that, do this, do that. But I was no longer hoarse. So I made an agreement. Lord, you gave me the gift. I wanted to use it for me before. Now I only use it for you. And I have not stopped singing or doing voiceover work. And I am never hoarse. Unless I get a cold or the flu, of course, but not from the vocal use. And so, I'm almost in tears because every time I tell this story, I realize to whom much is given, much will be expected. And I sing more, and I sing with a youthful voice, more youthful than I've ever been, bigger pieces, more struggling, but it's all now a prayer. It's all a prayer. It's not just music to glorify music itself or to glorify a voice. It's to glorify God. And that's how I use it. And I have a little trio, and we just started putting together Lenten concerts and been doing that. But that is how my whole life has changed. And my husband, through his conversion, coming into the faith, and then we met Father Duffner, and then coming to work for EWTN. My husband works there in the audio and the radio department, and I sing for EWTN. I sing there for their mass. I put on music videos. I've sung for Dana, the Irish singer. She has her own music show, and it's all from that. I think I really have to say, Sarah, that one night, that Christmas Eve of saying, listening to what the priest said, God has given you your gifts and your talents in your life. You give that back to him. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a long journey, but that is how I think I've surrendered everything to Christ. Yeah. And how it's changed both my husband. It changed his life, too. So that's it. So I have sacred classics, which are more the operatic, but they are sacred arias. Both the Panis Angelicus, both of those. I've got the Schubert and the Bach Gounod Ave Marias and the Schubert Panis Angelicus and the Landilo and some Bach and Brahms. And then my sacred Christmas I use with languages from around the world and using original instruments from around the world and working on a third album, but I'm not quite sure when that's going to come out yet.
It's such a beautiful testimony to how, you leave the door ajar for God and he'll flood into your life. You left that door open, you just gave him that invitation, and then he was able to work in your life and heal you in such a beautiful way. And now you're using your gifts to serve him. Thank you so much for sharing with us and also for all the work
you're
doing and for sharing your gifts. Of course, as you mentioned, you have those albums, Sacred Classics and Sacred Christmas, and people can listen to a little bit of those on your website, adrianneprice.com. We'll put a link on our website. I mean, this type of music has always been beautiful, because it's just objectively beautiful, that doesn't change. But I think there's a renewed appreciation from especially the young people within the church for sacred music. Yeah, so thank you for the work you're doing.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, Sarah. And if I, it's been a few years. I was back in that and visiting my family about 3 years ago. And if I get back, I would love to come and see you and say hello to Cradio. I'd love to see your facilities and meet the people there. And I do want to encourage all musicians that it's not the music, it's Jesus.
Amen.
That we use those gifts for Him. Use it. And I encourage everybody, get involved in your parishes and be in union with Christ. I just have to say, here in the South, everybody says, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus? You know, because we're here in the Bible Belt, and I say yes. But I have a union with Him when I receive Him in the Eucharist.
Mm.
You know? So let's be evangelists, let's evangelize, and pray for our Pope and pray for one another. So maybe someday soon, I hope. Sarah, I will get to meet you in person. And I thank you for taking this time to ask me for this interview and to let me do this.
Thank you, and hopefully we will see you soon down under.
Yo, I look forward to it. Thank you, Sarah.
That was classical singer and recording artist Adrianne Price sharing her faith story and how her vocal nodules were miraculously healed. You can hear Adrianne's music on the Cradio stream and find out more about her work at adriannepryce.com. For more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.
Radio.org.au.